Welcome. It's Jeremy Allen Gould. I'm coming to you today to confirm between God and of man that, in fact, the rumors that you have all heard are true. I started this podcast because I freaking love music. I was privileged enough to book amazing artists and bands in the past, and I was lucky enough to stay in touch with many of them to this day. This is a place to hear their stories. Thank you so much for riding along on this journey, and I hope you enjoy what you hear. With that said, the rumors are definitely true.
Hey, it's Jeremy, and this latest episode, we've welcomed Andrew Carey from the band Evergreen Terrace. Known Andrew for quite a while, grew up with some of the band members of Evergreen Terrace, so it was really cool to hear his perspective on the band and all the records they put out, all the tours, and the just awesome opportunities they've been given over the years. So it was really cool to see kind of his headspace and where he was. And just a nice little talk about kind of just the band in general. So I really hope you enjoy this latest episode with Andrew Carey. Andrew, what's up, buddy boy?
Hey, how's it going?
How are you, man?
I'm pretty okay.
What are you up to?
Well, I'm well-ish.
What have you been up to?
Not Welsh, but Welsh.
That would be cooler, actually.
Yeah, it would be actually a lot cooler. I'll keep my opinion of the...
Of the Welsh?
Of the Welsh to myself.
Jeez. My boss's last name is Welsh.
I mean, I really like Princess Diana. I mean...
She's a sweetie.
Yeah, wasn't she like the Princess of Welsh?
Wales? Is that the same thing?
I have no idea.
I know. We sound stupid, but I don't know.
I refuse to learn about any British history.
I refuse to learn at all.
No. I'm American. We beat those fuckers in 1776.
I'm just going to play on my phone all day long.
Don't need to learn anything about British people. Fucking King George and his turkey leg, motherfucker. Good music. Great music from that.
Yes.
Island. Everything absolutely. Else is terrible.
The music is where it's at.
The music is where it's at. It must be because everything Cure. Else is terrible there.
The Cure?
Just like, yeah, The Cure. I mean, there's hundreds of bands.
Yeah. Dude.
Maybe Smith, not, yeah. And like, there's so many so good. There's so all, yeah. Not all of them.
I'm the sure Verve, Oasis.
Yeah.
All of it.
What's this new... I can't, God damn it. Why am I drawing the blank? I'll come up with it. There's a new band, a newish band. Heavy-ish. They're heavy punky. Like post-punkish. Like, I'm going to have to look it up. Maybe you could edit it in. And then...
Are they getting big?
Yeah.
So the only band I've seen recently that I can relate to is that. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm
cut out.
Trying to look at the name of that.
Is it called Loathe? Are they called Loathe?
No.
Because that band's pretty badass. They sound like new Deftones to me.
Really?
Yes, they're going on tour. I think they're going on tour with Under Oath, but they're freaking really good.
I'm going to have to listen to that. I'll have to check
they just
it out.
Played Underbelly recently with Code Orange.
Really?
But I didn't. Of course, I didn't go, but they're one of those bands I'm like, ooh, this band's pretty dope.
Nice. I've been so... just so out of touch and like, and recently, because I got off my SSRI, I'm starting to find myself enjoying things again.
Oh yeah.
So, I'm like, oh man, this is what feels good to have emotions and feelings.
Totally.
Suppressing them and stuff, but so with that, I've been trying to get back into finding new music instead of just always going
to the old. I'm the same way. I mean, I get on
kicks where I'm like all about like what I used to listen to, nostalgia, all that whole thing. And then I'll listen to new stuff and it just blows my mind. But then I always fall back to the old stuff just because it's comfort, you know? Yeah. Cool, man. Cool. What were you going to say? Yeah, it is cool.
It's going to come to me, the band.
Well, yeah, please let me know because I want to check them out, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Sick, dude. Well, let's talk about kind of when you and I met. I know we were talking earlier. I think I probably met you officially when I wound up booking you guys. And I grew up with Craig. So Craig and I went way back.
Yeah.
Back to church days, that whole shebang. And so I've always been a fan. It's like kind of one of those things where I moved away and I wound up living in the Midwest and then I got really bored. And so I started booking shows. That's kind of why things happened. And then I wound up getting to book you guys, which was really cool to me. And it was just a kind of a, I don't know. It was a cool opportunity to reconnect with dude, you know, obviously Craig, but you know, being able to meet you and Jason and Josh, and who was drumming for you guys at the time? Chris?
Chris? Yeah, I think actually maybe Chris was, and then probably for another turn when As Cities Burn, when you did that was Butters. That was
That's right, Kyle. That's right. Yeah.
Maybe the first time. Maybe not.
I mean, I knew Chris way back in the day from Lugnut days. So, I wound up booking you guys with That City's Burn. I think it was Burning Season and Winter Solstice was a tour.
Yeah.
Long ago at a Headway skate park, I think. Remember that skate park? I don't know if you remember that, but I know that's probably not a.
I remember that show, and it was like, was it a floor show?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right on the half pipe.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I remember it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And then remember it. That was a great show.
Yeah.
It was pretty big. It was like.
Yeah. Totally.
I don't know. I mean, would you say big back then? I think like 150, maybe even more.
Probably more than that, to be honest with you. I feel like you got like that was like at the time, like between you guys and As Cities Burn, you guys were like crushing it.
Yeah.
So, you know. That I was trying to think. I wound up doing you guys with. I know this is so stupid. Remember that band Power Glove?
Yeah.
Yeah, the like the Nintendo band.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wound up doing with you guys. It was like I think it was like a Warped Tour off date or something. It was like you guys, Power Glove. I think Alisana, whatever the heck they're called.
Yeah.
And then it was just like a little combined show. And then there was a couple others.
It was in a half of it was a venue and the other half was like
a nerd store.
Place.
Bro.
Where dude, nerds Oz would come Cafe. And go play Magic the Gathering.
Yes,
and,
Oz Cafe.
And I was jealous that I couldn't play Magic the Gathering.
Well, it's like, they definitely played it.
I didn't know how to do that.
Dude, that guy
or Pokemon.
That guy wound up, he was a big Deicide fan, and he wound up painting the name Deicide on the wall. And then he booked him.
Nice. He's like, here you go, guys.
Hey, he's just like worshiping them instead of Satan.
Do you guys care if I get a couple of your underwears? If you want to change.
It's funny you say that because that totally probably happened.
He just stole some of Deicide's underwear.
Yeah, who would want Deicide's underwear? That's a real question.
I don't know who wouldn't.
Was it Glenn Benton? Glenn Benton's gnarly underwear? Oof.
Man, bummer. Good. Probably.
What platinum selling death metal recording artist?
Yeah.
That sucks. Anyway,
if you don't like it, you can put it in the compost.
And that's true.
Great. It's good. Be great. Yeah.
It probably.
Yeah. So I feel that I knew who, at least who you were. Like, you know, it's Jeremy Gould. He knows everything in the scene back then, man.
The scene boy. The scene man.
Yeah. No, I like, so Craig joined the band. And so I was like kind of just, you know, I was real open-minded back then about like all kinds of music, especially once we got Craig in the band. Because Craig has always been like a very influential person
totally.
to me about like getting new music. Like that was one of so much good music came from just from like Craig driving and like listening to stuff that he would put on and be like, who's this? And you're like, oh, this is this band called, you know, the South or, you know, something, anything like yeah. a whole plethora. And so, but, and he would always tell stories about you and him, kind of growing up together in like, you know, the music scene, indie rock scene, and like, also even like hardcore scene and stuff like that. Yeah. And it was weird because I had such a different, like clique of people that I hung out with and like coming out of like a punk scene. And I think he, for some reason, right when he joined the band, maybe I feel like there was a time after we played a show at Murray Hill before you moved out to the Midwest that we went to Denny's, and I think
yes. we ran into each other. Yes.
Yeah.
I remember that actually.
And it was like that. It was like a Denny's and you sat down and I think we all instantly had like a good rapport with each other. And we're like, oh, you know, hey, you know, people who aren't assholes. Hi, let's become immediate friends. That's all it took to become someone's friend when you're like
back
of the day and where they go, oh, you like underground music and you're not gonna beat me up. All right.
Yeah.
This is great. Let's be friends. Yeah. And so that's my first, because I remember when we went with those shows that you were booking at, you know, like in Kentucky or something like that, right?
Kansas.
Started with a
same
K.
Thing. Kansas. Same thing. It's freaking same thing.
Yeah, whatever. I love all these places I'm talking shit about. I love the Midwest. and I love the UK. But anyways, so I don't remember like being like, oh, hi, my name is Andrew.
Nice yeah.
Pleasure to meet you. I just kind of knew who you were. I didn't feel like you went to a show before you booked a show.
Totally. Down in Oklahoma City.
Was it Oklahoma City?
Yeah, okay. It was with Agnostic Front and Strung Out. I remember that because So we're walking up to the venue. I'll never forget this story. We're walking up to the venue and Agnostic Front's playing, and I don't know who from Agnostic Front was out front unloading their stuff. And next thing I know, some guy walks up to one of them and just says something drunkenly. And one of the guys from Agnostic Front, like, takes exception to it. And it's like, I'm from New York, mother effer, and just knocks a dude out. And I'm like, I'm on the guest list. Like, it was like one of those, like, moments where I was like, this rules, but I don't want to be a part of it. I want to be privy to this. Like, it was, you know, bizarre. The green room.
The green room in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, Oklahoma City. I'm pretty sure that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Dude, it was
us. Strung Out and Agnostic Front. And we
I want to say there was
with the Agnostic Front tour. I don't know. I think it was maybe who else was on tour with Agnostic Front, because
there was somebody else. I can't remember. It's been so long. But
I don't know if it was somebody from Agnostic Front that did that, because I kind of remember, but it was our first time, like, really kind of.
I feel like it was a bass player for some weird reason. He was like a smaller guy, but he was like stout.
I don't know.
Maybe. Whatever. Who's to say?
Yeah. Who's to say? So we had toured with them previously, or no, we met up with them for the first time in Europe, like I think the summer before that tour, and then we actually been on a couple of tours with Agnostic Front, and dude, I love them. They're one of my favorite bands to tour with, just insanely, like, just great, good dudes. Like,
that's awesome.
And they're fun. You know, like get along, and then they know. You know, they also know. They have a lot of like good band ethics. And when I say like band ethics, it's like, you know, like, okay, here's the time to do the sound check. Let's respect the venue, respect everybody. And also at the same time, it's like, we'll you know, have some drinks, but not get out of control.
Yeah.
Or like sometimes when the calls for it, you get out of control. Yeah, they're awesome. Yeah, and it was kind of always intimidating to be like, oh man, we're gonna go play a show with Agnostic Front and
it's crazy.
Thinking that they're going to be some one way, and then it's like, oh, these guys are amazingly
royal. They're a hardcore royalty, you know?
They are hard, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And awesome. They don't act like it either.
No, I know. Just be like, yeah. They know what's going on.
They do. Yeah.
That's awesome. Ooh. Well, let's talk about you growing up and kind of how you experienced music for the first time, the records that kind of shaped you and the influences and whatnot, and then kind of how you, I guess, began to gravitate to Evergreen Terrace, I guess.
Yeah, gravitate towards screaming and jumping around.
Yeah.
And a hardcore band, hardcore punk metalcore band. Let's see. So I guess probably like everybody, when they start hitting puberty, start being able to figure out shit for their own, stop listening to whatever their parents or mom listened to. Like, you know, so I can sing every like 90s country music artist, right? That's what I listened to before. It was like my mom was listening to country music for some reason back then. She's a hippie. Was a hippie, and she was like really into like folk, like 70s folk. So I know a lot about like, you know, all the good 60s, 70s music. And then like some reason in the 90s, she just listened to country music, and it was 90s country music. And, you know, George Strait, Garth Brooks. Yeah.
Chris Gaines.
Yeah. is that Garth Brooks alias? Oh man. And then I started really getting into surfing. Like surfing was my life, right? And I grew up on the other side of the intercoastal, and that's like for people that don't live in Jacksonville, you know, Duval has a beach, but it's not Jacksonville. It's like separated by this intercoastal, and most of the people who are into the surf culture live east of this, you know,
the
little
ditch.
Waterway.
The ditch. This,
yeah, the ditch. Yeah. And it's completely two different worlds. So I me and my friends, when we started surfing, we lived west of the ditch, and we kind of taught ourselves how to surf, kind of taught ourselves how to do, you know, like that. So we lived in our own little bubble. And was just taking notes from like movies of what to be like, what's a surfer supposed to be. We watched
Kelly Slater, bro.
Yeah. We watched like it. Yeah. We loved it, Kelly Slater, but it was like, what's in surf magazines and what's in old surf videos, because like surf videos we didn't really find like the newer ones just recently. And I don't think they even were really that prominent. But once we got a little older and started like, becoming friends with people at the beach, we started like getting into like, oh, we're finding out that there's local surf videos. A guy would make local surf videos, and he would put like punk rock music on to these surf videos, and so kind of started getting into, we're like, who is this heavier band? Oh, also when I got into middle school, you know, like, obviously in the ether of being in middle school, I wasn't just like listening to country music. I was like, oh, I got into, I'll step back. I got into grunge, you know, cause I'm that old. And it was, you know, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, you know, Soundgarden. I liked, you know, Alice in Chains was great. So, you know, listening to those bands, you know, even though they were kind of getting on the radio, it was an introduction to heavier music. And then once I started, you know, I still love surfing with all my heart. And once I started like getting into the surf videos and finding out that there was actually like heavier, more aggressive music that were being played on the surf videos while, you know, you've seen some guys surfing, like, who the fuck is this? And like, oh, that's, this is 10-foot pole. You know, I'm like, oh, great. Oh, this is Bad Religion. This is a band like Lagwagon. We're like, oh, great. Like, I love that. So that's kind of pretty much my introduction into like punk rock and like kind of underground music. And then, there was this local band. Do you remember FOC?
I don't think I do.
Yeah. They was like,
I remember OBC.
OBC. There was this band called FOC, and they played with this local band that was here. Not the Cleveland Ringworm, but
Yeah, I remember that the other Ringworm. Yeah, yeah, I do remember.
Played
that.
With them a whole lot, and there was a show at this old little like kind of thing called the Flag Pavilion down at the beach, and there was a show there, and it was the first punk rock show I've ever went to, and I was like 13. I was actually just me and my friends were wandering off from the beach, and we're like, "What is this?" They're like, "Oh, this is that punk rock." It's like, "Oh, cool, this is punk rock," and people were moshing. I didn't have my shoes on. I was like, "I'm gonna go mosh," and so I was like, "This is awesome. This is great." I felt really good about like I was like, "Yeah, cool." And then the Milk Bar started really blowing up.
Oh, love the Milk Bar.
And then, like, every weekend, it was like, here's another punk show. I was like, oh, I'm going to go to another punk show. I'm going to go to a punk show. And slowly, like, you know, my surfing world was so close to the punk rock music that I listened to. Like,
totally.
Very much like Epitaph, Fat Records.
Yeah.
It was pretty much.
And all those bands were at the Milk Bar, like, every other weekend.
Yeah.
Every
other weekend, for sure. And then through that, going back to Agnostic Front, so Agnostic Front had a little time, they spent a little time on Epitaph. And so I was like, okay, let me check out this band, Agnostic Front, that's on this label with all these other bands that I love. And so they played the Milk Bar, Agnostic Front played the Milk Bar, and they blew it away. It was the most dangerous, like insane show I ever went to. The Milk Bar had a wooden barrier.
Yeah, I remember
Roger
that.
Just like, fuck this barrier up. There's just giant beast of men in this 15-year-old kid, like surround. Like I don't know. I was scared shitless, but I had a great time. And that was my like real first introduction into like a hardcore show, and like a real hardcore show. And you know what that means, but yeah, real hardcore. So that's kind of how I got in, started getting into hardcore. And from there, it was like getting into, I started listening to Snapcase and Boys Over Fire.
Them. Yeah. Love them.
Yeah. And then that was around the time. So that was that was around the time that I met a guy named Josh Smith, who was our first bass player. Did you ever meet Josh Smith?
I don't know if I did.
Yeah, he was our very first bass player, and he was the guy that really started getting me really introduced to
hardcore.
Like more hardcore stuff. Yeah, like you know, Ensign and like Ensign. Yeah.
Yeah, I
know. I don't know how
I saw them at the Milk Bar. Definitely saw them at the Milk Bar. Saw them at the Milk Bar.
Madball played at the Milk Bar. I think like Milk Bar actually started getting more like hardcore shows.
Yeah. And even the Moto. Too. I don't know if you remember the Moto Lounge. Do you remember the Moto Lounge? I saw Earth Crisis VOD downset and Stillsuit, which Stillsuit wound up being, I think, like guys from like Glassjaw or something. Like there was like, it was funny because that was, Jacksonville was not a hardcore area at all.
No.
It wasn't. No. There was like 20 people there.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, so then, you know, I was really getting into it. And Chris Brown, who was in Lugnut, he gets back from a Lugnut tour one time. And I think actually Old Yellow Card was playing at a rave place called Evolution.
Over in Arlington?
Yeah.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Shows. Yeah. And so Chris Brown comes up to me after coming on a tour, and he's like, "Do you want to start a hardcore band?" I was like, "Yes, I definitely want to start a hardcore band." I was in like a crappy punk band at the time, and like me and Chris knew each other, but he's like, "Let's start a hardcore band." I was like, "All right." He's like, he played drums. I was hanging out with Woody. Woody was like, "I'll play guitar." I was like, "Cool, I'll scream." My buddy Josh Smith I was just talking about, he's like, "We'll get him to play bass." And it was like, okay, cool. We'll get another guitar player. And so then we picked up Josh James, who was like 16 at the time. I was 19. Nice. Josh is 16. And then we were like, all right, who are we going to play to? There's no, it's like, we know what it is. Like, yeah,
there's this audience.
Yeah, there was a few people. There was actually one other hardcore band called In Due Time that was.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they were. Cole and Chase
are really good friends of me.
Yeah, and I mean, you could technically, definitely say that Ringworm was like a legit kind of a hardcore band.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they were a hardcore punk band, but we were like going for like that newer metalcore.
Yeah.
Like punk hardcore like. Sound like not an old school hardcore sound, but so some of those things that were like starting to come out like Snapcase and Voice That's Fire, and you know, when Poison the Well came through, it was like, oh, this is, you know, Morning Again, very metalish sounding hardcore, and so we were like going for that, and there was no other band in Jacksonville that was like that. I mean, In Due Time did have like a little bit of a metalcore sound, but and then we decided to, we were like, let's fucking grow a scene. Let's do it.
Let's cultivate a scene.
Yeah. Let's put some, let's put it in a Petri dish. See if it grows. And it did.
Dude, I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Pretty cool.
I was in Kansas at the time. It's funny, 'cause I'm thinking about this, and, I had heard the name, and I didn't even realize it was Craig and you and all them at the time. I just kind of, you know, via the internet, it's like, oh, Jacksonville band, that's cool. And I went into like a Hot Topic in Wichita, which is the only place you could really buy records at the time, like most, you know, middle of nowhere places. Dude, Wichita, Hot Topic, Wichita.
Yeah.
I went in, and the guy, one of the guys working there, he knew who I was. And he's like, bro, I saw your name. I was like, what? And he's like, I saw your name in the Evergreen Terrace record. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, bro, they thank you in the record. And I was like, okay. And so, like, of course, at that point, I was like, I knew the name, but I just didn't correlate. And Craig and I hadn't talked for a while, so that's probably part of the reason. And so I wound up listening to it, and I was like, this is sick. Like, and then I started to, I think I reached out to him via like instant messenger or whatever. And then we kind of
AIM.
We started reconnecting, and it was just like, I just didn't realize the whole, what you guys had done. Like, I like was like, whoa, this is really cool. Like, this is something I think when him and I were hanging out back in the day, that would have been everything to us at that point. You know, we used to drive to St. Pete to go see hardcore shows like Strong Arm, Zayo, Overthrow, Set Apart, like all those, like, you know, South Florida hardcore, Shilud, all those bands down there. And it would be like a 4-hour drive type thing, so we could see hardcore shows. And even Murray Hill Theater never really had hardcore shows like at all. I think the heaviest band was like Blindside, and that was like, you know, not really heavy, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, that was a big deal, like, when I had detached myself from this area and then been like, whoa, this is cool. This is, like, a whole new world, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, like, it was an inevitable thing that was going to blow up, because it got popular, you know, not just, like, in Jacksonville. It was already very popular in South Florida and Central Florida. And yeah, because, you know, Strong Arm, you know, Shalud, Morning Again, all those, you know, bands. The fire was coming. We were just like one little tinder, like, was like, all right, we'll catch it. And, you know, like, it did catch on really fast. Like, people were like, people were really into screaming music. And it was great to have.
Yeah.
So many people that still like have a lot to do with like the hardcore scene today, that you'll still see some of the same people at the shows, the same shows, you know, the shows. It's great. Like, it's awesome. Yeah. I don't mean to like jump the subject, but you kind of touched something that I was like something that I kind of wanted to maybe discuss is like how, like, so, you know, Evergreen started off as a Christian band, and I was a Christian at one time, but like how interesting and crazy good and this might be just because I had started off, was the hardcore Christian scene, not hardcore Christian, but hardcore scene.
Yeah.
With, you know what I mean? Like Christians, Christian hardcore bands were like so incredibly good.
Oh,
I know. In the early 2000s.
Absolutely.
And it, I mean, like, yeah, like I'm trying to think of all of them. Yeah,
Zayo.
Like Zayo.
Strong Arm. Strong Arm
was insane.
No, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like even like Unashamed, Focus, yeah. Overcome. Even, yeah.
Like
Bloodshed.
Had,
yeah. Yeah.
And those bands, and it's not just like, you know, like there was a lot of times, and you know, in Tooth and Nail as much as I know Tooth and Nail and the Christian scene, they would always have that like kind of, oh, this band is.
If you like this band, like
Dogwood would be like, oh, they're like the Christian Good Riddance, or like oh man, this band sounds like this. They're the Christian Lagwagon, but not so much of not so much in the hardcore scene. It was like not very much of a ripoff like kind of thing.
No, they were doing their own thing.
Like Zayo. I mean,
dude.
Yeah, well, yeah. I would say Zayo after Splinter of the Shards, The Birth of Separation, after that one, that's, I feel like, right when Dan joined the band.
Yeah, it, totally.
That was, like, completely original, unique sound that to this day, that band is still one of my favorites.
They're mind-blowing. Yeah, absolutely.
Top five favorite bands. Yeah.
Dude, freaking Where Blood and Fire is, like, perfect. Yeah. 100% perfect.
Dude. You missed them at Furnace Fest. Oh, my God. They played, like, not last year, but the year before. Yeah, their set blew away like everybody's set. Mm. Yeah, Comeback Kid did a really good job.
Comeback Kid's pretty dope.
But Comeback Kid always does.
Zayo's naughty. They're very naughty.
They're not. Yeah, but anyways,
dude,
I'm very thankful for that time too, because it also didn't have. Being in that little Christian scene, you didn't have very much pressure of much of anything other than just enjoying the music and, you know, not having to, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's just what you get when you're 19 and 20. Like, I just like the music, man. And then you get a little older, you're like,
it's all about the tunes.
Yeah.
Bro, the tunes, I get it. Man.
You get older, you're like, I like drinking now. I like drinking and hitting on girls and then just being emo. And then you get your heart broken. You're like, now I'm emo.
It's real like to me. It's real to me, damn it.
Yeah.
Dude.
Go back to 19 when all I wanted to do was just listen to music.
Bro.
Can never get back to that.
So, hey, real quick, I'm going to go pee real quick. I'm going to edit this out. So give me like 2 minutes. I drink.
I think you should bring the microphone in there with you and don't edit this out.
No, Evan, kill me. Give me like 2 minutes.
All right.
This is a pee break. I know you understand. This is a pee break. Only using one hand. This is a pee break. On the podcast show, this is a pee break, even flow.
Bro, that was a game changer.
Pepe.
That'd be so bad. That I had a whiskey Coke and I just did not. I was struggling. All right.
But the whiskey or the Coke?
Who's to say? Really? All right. I'm writing this down when I need to edit. Okay. So let's go back to Evergreen Terrace. When you guys were starting out, you obviously said you guys are a Christian band somewhat. Murray Hill, where were you guys playing at?
Oh, so our first show was at Murray Hill with Sailmate, a local band, local punk band. And then we would play at a church down at the beach that it was a vineyard church. And it was like a church inside a strip mall, like a shopping center.
Was that Richard and Kelly doing the shows?
That's Richard and Kelly. Yeah.
Yeah. I know them.
And so they would, every weekend just yeah, please come and play. It gave us a nice place to play and like cultivate the scene. And so we were out there like literally almost every weekend. If there was a band that we wanted to see, you know, we would bring them out. We would be like, okay, we want to play with this band. Like, somehow we would manage to get together. Like, you know, who was Norma Jean turned in, or they turned into Norma Jean, but Ludacris.
Yeah.
Remember that band? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got them. We even got, we got Further Scenes Forever to come up. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what other, like, I think even, I don't know if we got Stretch Armstrong, but because Stretch Armstrong at the time, at one point, was like the biggest like hardcore band that we like knew of. We're like,
dude,
oh my God.
Totally.
And it's so great. I don't know. There was a lot of bands that we just like got through and we were like, this is amazing. I didn't think we played with Zayo there.
I believe it.
So that was probably the main place that we played at until the Imperial opened up.
And, oh, downtown, yeah.
Yeah, Mikey.
Yeah, I love Mikey.
Yeah, Mikey Sero. I'm sorry.
Forget about Mikey. Side.
Yeah. And he started booking with Lisa at the Imperial. And Mikey was in OBC. And so
Lisa Thomas?
Yeah,
great.
Lisa Thomas. Yeah, so we started booking at the Imperial, and then the Imperial, which was like a real venue. We didn't have to play on the floor. It wasn't a church. And then Evergreen was starting to go on tour, too, a little bit here and there. And so that was our home place for a good probably 3 or 4 years. And that was awesome. Yeah.
Dude.
And we practiced upstairs. Another good place to, like, help grow, not just, like a scene, but also like us grow musically. There's so many like factors that we put in that like are added to, you know, what success that Evergreen has had is due to some things just being a little lucky, like being able to have a venue that we play at, that we practice upstairs. And then even before that, have like a practice place that we would go to, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays, you know, every week, and which was Chip's Music off of Southside. And like, you know, we were kids, so we couldn't really afford a lot of equipment, but Mike Schmidt, who worked at Chip's Music,
I love Mike. Yeah
he was just like, come and practice here. And if it wasn't for that, Evergreen, I don't know what, if we would have made it or not, but like it was just those little factors of like having a place to practice, having like as much equipment to practice on that we wanted to, and then having, you know, places to play. And then also like we want to do this. This is something that we really wanted to do. We really have nothing better to do. And people seem to like it. And so we just kind of keep it going. And then we started going on tour, and from there just kept going and kept going, and just writing records and playing shows, and I don't know, losing our mind,
dude, losing all hope, I guess.
Yeah.
Speaking of, no pun intended, I was actually going to ask kind of about all the records, if you don't mind. You know, kind of how did the Eulogy thing happen? And let's talk about your first record, you know.
Oh, the first record was on...
Indianola, that's right.
Yeah, we were starting a tour and losing all hope. So we're starting a tour, met a guy that did shows in Valdosta. He was starting a label, Indianola, and he wanted to put out our first record. So I still have like... hundreds of copies of for some reason, I don't know, maybe I know 50 copies of Losing All Hope. If anybody wants a CD, come at me.
PayPal.
I got a lot of Losing All Hope is Freedom CDs for some reason.
Probably like one, actually, surprisingly, because I don't have one.
I got you. Yeah, oh. I'll give you a whole box, man. You can just stand on the corner of your New York City high rise.
My high rise.
high rise back there. And it's sell Swing Some, Losing All Hope. We'd probably get $3 for each one.
Hey, maybe, you never know.
At most.
At most.
Yeah, so Matt put out that record. And then we did a tour off of that record. You know, I think that we came out with a full length I think that record came out in 2000. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So basically maybe 2001. I'll have to check. I'm bad with dates and names, but it was, fairly right off the bat from when we like started, which is, you know, December 1999, came out with a full length record. And, then we did a tour. The first time that we went out to, this was the first time the whole band was put together with, Jason. Josh Smith left the band. Jason joined the band. Woody left, and then
Craig. Okay.
Then that's when we got Craig, and then it was Chris Brown, Josh James, and I. And then we had bought a more electric van. It's like More Electric, the company. Okay. They sold us one of their like utility vans for $5. It was my best friend. Yeah, my best friend Jordan Moore, his dad owns More Electric, and he sold it to us for $5. And we took that thing all the way to we took that thing all the way to California and back in 2001. So that's when we started touring, and that was fun. We put out a split with 1/5.
Yeah.
Right after that.
Same on Indianola as well.
Came out on Indianola. And then shortly after that, we are like, okay, getting a little bit more of a name. And that's when Eulogy Records was like, hey, what are you going to want to be on our record label? And at the time, we were like, you know, wanting to be on a bigger record label than Indianola. And we were like, let's talk to, we were talking to Solid State. They wanted such a crazy deal. And like a 6-album deal with whatever kind of, I can't remember what the contract was, but it was something that was like, okay, we're going to be on Solid State forever.
Yeah.
You know, if we do this, and we had a little bit of like an idea of what to do, as far as signing to like a label that is bigger, that, you know, didn't have more than a 1-page contract. And then we really were trying to shoot for Victory, which would have put us in the same boat as signing for Solid State, just like,
sure.
And, you know,
different world.
And we really didn't want to sign to Solid State either, because we didn't want to be pigeonholed into
a Christian band.
Christian, because we were also all at that time, we were kind of starting to like question our beliefs about. Sure. And so we were like, okay, not Solid State, like, even though that is a good idea, and not, like, we want to do Victory Records, like, but also like they haven't really offered us anything. We were like going on tour, and they would send somebody out to watch us, and you're like, you know, they're all right. But that was like Victory Records is fucking huge.
Yeah, at the time, absolutely.
Insane, like, yeah, like
that's so, the label you want to be on for sure.
Yeah, that's what we had. And so nothing came about with that. And then Eulogy Records approached us and was like, hey, I'll sign you guys. And we're like, all right, well, I guess we'll do that. And signed with Eulogy. It was only like a three album deal or something like that. And then we were able to record Burned Alive by Time with them through that. And then we just kind of blew up a little bit, and they come to find out a little bit later that like Victory Records was just about to, I don't know if this is true or not, but was just about to ask us.
Wow.
You guys wanna, we're like,
if they wanted you, they would have bought you out.
Yeah, well, yeah,
we
weren't that popular at that time, but so we put out Burned Alive by Time. And like hindsight, looking at like some of those shows when we were did the Burned Alive by Time show tour, and like touring off of that record, they were insane. They're like a lot bigger. Like going back and like looking at pictures and looking at videos, I'm like, damn, all right. I always have a real problem of being like not as thinking as not looking at the whole picture, if you will. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, it's just like, oh man, there's only 500 people at our show.
That's a lot. That's a real super lot. Know,
and I never really thought that. I'm always thankful for everybody that's there, but I'm just like, can we get bigger? I don't know. Yeah. And that was just my mindset. That's the mindset of a 22-year-old kid. You know, like not thinking that you're doing good enough. And it wasn't that I was upset about the menu. It was like, am I doing good enough? Am I doing better? Could I do better? And being better is one thing, but like I had a lot of insecurities back then, and I still do.
Sure.
But I hide them a little bit better now. But totally. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And so that was a little bit of our time in Eulogy. We came out with a DVD.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was cool. And then we came out with a cover record on Eulogy. We renegotiated some contracts, which was terrible on our part because I think we got pretty screwed over. We thought we were doing something good for ourselves, but ended up being not really that good. Mm. And then we came out with Sincerity, and we had like we were on Flower booking.
Oh yeah, Suzanne.
And Suzanne.
Yeah, that's how I booked you. Yeah, that's who I booked you guys.
Yeah, she was. It was amazing. It was a really great time.
She was awesome.
But everybody that we were talking to that was in like the industry part that we were in were like, you guys are gonna die on Eulogy. I'm like, okay, we're gonna die. It's like these, like you're just, it's like.
We
had our renegotiations. We had it for like a few more albums. They weren't going to be putting in much more money into us than I think that, you know, that they're willing to do without probably even renegotiating the contracts again. So we had become friends with Tim Lambesis from
As
Adelaide
Nine. Yeah,
we were. Through some weird circumstances, like they actually dying before they got.
I saw them with you guys, and down in Oklahoma City. And now I didn't think about it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they played the Imperial
with Hope's Fall.
Was it with Hope's Fall?
No. Well, I saw a tour with you guys. It was you guys, Hope's Fall, them, and Planes Mistaken for Stars or somebody, some random. I don't know. I can't remember. But anyway.
Was that before they got really big?
I think it was about when they were blowing up, but either way.
Okay.
Either way.
So we hung out at a couple of punk houses back in the day. Like when I say punk houses, like friends would have an apartment and then like all their other friends would squat at the apartment. So we basically were like living at our friend's apartment squatting. And As I Lay Dying played a show, and this was before they got really big, and they needed a place to stay. So we were like, come and stay at our punk house with us. And so that's where the first time we met As I Lay Dying. And the second time we played Cornerstone, and we were staying in a dorm, a vacant dorm that was like emptied out for the summer. And we had bought like, you know, the room, we bought the dorm room, and then in comes As I Lay Dying. And they're like, oh, we bought the same dorm room.
Hotel or the or dorms?
It was dorms because we both played Cornerstone.
Yeah.
And so like and then we were like, hey, you were that band that stayed at our punk house with us. And they're like, yeah. So anyway, moving right along, we actually become friends with Tim, and he was the one. As I Lay Dying was like blowing up.
Yeah.
We did a tour with them. It was our first tour in Europe. We did with and it was with As I Lay Dying. And so that was another way that we got really close with Tim. And Tim was like, I can He's like, I could probably get you guys off of Eulogy and get you signed to Metal Blade. And so he actually pitched to, people at Metal Blade for them to buy us. And then they negotiated some stuff and then they bought us off of Eulogy. And then, so yeah, we were on top of the world, like so stoked, like off of Eulogy. Totally. Chris Brown left the band. We got Kyle Mims. We had like a whole new like spark in us and wanted to just write a killer record. And that's when we wrote Wolf Biker.
Great record. And
yeah, it's a great record. I love it. And we were just so energized. And I think that was like one time when you could feel like how like connective, you and your bandmates can be. That was, right now, I feel like a really great rapport with my bandmates. But at that time too, it was just, you're young and energized, and we were all on the same level of like what we wanted to write about, how we wanted to present ourselves, how pissed off at the world we are. We all kind of were like a collective entity, and it was just as one, so it was great time. Awesome to be like on a label that like wasn't shady like Eulogy Records is, and real, like they're a major label,
yeah,
so
they are the metal major,
yeah,
label. Yeah,
yeah. And so we did that. Wolf Biker was great. Love Wolf Biker. I love all the energy that we put into it. It was awesome. And that's when we really came to like knowing ourselves.
Yeah.
To me personally, like how I wanted to express myself in my writing of like lyrics and stuff, and
sure,
really like come through with piss off at the world and
yeah,
religion and
yeah,
assholes and shit like that. Yeah.
Was Metal Blade stoked on the record? How did they receive it?
So I don't think they were. They weren't that stoked.
Really?
I think they were pretty stoked, but I think they were expecting they were expecting us to get them from having like these metal bands, and wanted us to be like a gateway from, like, to get into like a Warped Tour kind of like crowd.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it translated that well. We did get into a Warped Tour crowd. We were on the Warped Tour, but it wasn't like to the extreme of like where it's like Alisana were going, or yeah, like a Day to Remember.
Yeah.
Or, 4 Year Strong. So they might have like wanted us to write more in that style and be more poppy when we came out with like a pissed off, fuck you, punky, hardcore metal record. And so I don't think they were like, they were stoked on it. I think they liked the way that it sounded, but I think that it didn't translate to what they wanted. And then after they didn't get to where they wanted to be with us, I think that they kind of like lost a little bit of steam. And then we put out Almost Home, which I think is also another like phenomenal record.
That's great.
I love that record. It's different. It's so very different than all of our other records, but it's also, I love it a lot. I think Craig put a lot of himself into that record too, and you could see it. And, but that was when, that was 2009 when Almost Home came out, and we had been like touring our asses off, and a lot of pressure, a lot of things, a lot of weird shit, a lot of internal stuff. Yeah. And then that's basically a little bit after Almost Home came out. That's when Josh left the band.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then Metal Blade dropped us.
How was that? How did that feel?
I mean, I figured it was coming, like, especially right when Josh, like, left, because Josh was such a major part of the band. Yeah. It was, like, the liaison to basically to Metal Blade, to our booking agents, you know, to the people that we talked to in Europe, just, like, basically everybody. So yeah. Josh was that. Josh was, and that was a little bit of what caused a lot of the internal problems was that, and I don't blame Josh like at all because he took care of like everything. But as he was taking care of most of this like business end of the work, you know, like I just decided, you know, like, okay, well, I'm just gonna fuck off and drink if I'm don't need to do anything. So like my laissez-faire-ish fucking approach to the band is like, okay, well, I'll just get up there and scream, sing, drink shit tons, and, you know, Josh take care of all the business. Probably might have put a little bit of more pressure and riff on it. So once Josh left, you know, we were left without that middle guy, and then so we couldn't really have I don't even think we even, like, Craig and I, Jason had left like the year before too, and Kyle left, so it was just really just me, Craig, and Josh, and then whenever, like, so when Josh left, it was just basically the original members were just me and Craig, and yeah. I don't think we even had, like, the gusto to, like, be like, all right, like, argue, like, hey, no, we'll stay together, let's do that. So then when Josh left, we had like that moment of like crossroads. We're like, okay, let's see what we want to do.
Yeah.
So I said, like, I suggested to Craig that we ask. Sorry, let's back this up. Alex Varian had joined the band.
Love Alex.
Yeah, love. Fucking love Alex. Alex was the bass player. He had joined the band. He was basically hired just to play bass and not really be a part of the band. He was a part of the band. Josh wanted to pay him like per tour per week, as almost a hired person. But you know, so when Josh left, I was just like, why don't we move Alex from bass to guitar? And so Alex would move from bass to guitar. We'll ask Jason to come back and play bass, and then we'll get Brad Moxie to play drums. And then that's how kind of like we're like, yeah, let's not break up. Alex has always been a guitar player, and yeah. so instead of just being a bass player, so Alex just picked it up right away, stoked on it. We all were stoked, and we had a friend at Matt at Rise Records who was like, well, Rise will sign you. And so we signed to Rise, and then we will and then that's when we put out Dead Horses.
Yeah.
After a few years after that. Yeah. And that was great. A lot of like a whole bunch of new wind at our sails, you know, kind of going. Yeah. We were touring again, almost like nonstop. I don't know. I kind of had like a mental breakdown from like touring from Wolf Biker to doing the tours for Almost Home and then Dead Horses. And I was like mentally exhausted. So yeah. I don't know. That's when I quit. Like I'm going to, that's when I took a year off or so. And that ended up being really, really boring and really shitty and dumb.
I mean, you got to have some sort of break, though, you know?
Yeah, you know, you got to step away to see what you missed. And then when we got back together, like, hey, let's get back together. Let's get the band back together, bro.
Get the band back together.
And Craig in that time had gotten a real job and had had a real baby
and a real wife or
had
girlfriend.
A real wife. Real. Yeah. And I was like, what are you doing, man? But it'll be wild and free like me forever, Craig. And then, but then so yeah, and so we decided that like we would just do it kind of more like more of a part time kind of thing, yeah. which has its own challenges because like any entertainment industry that you're going to be in, it's nearly impossible to do anything part time. That's why like if anybody have ever asked me, which they don't. How do you make it? How do you become successful? You have to put everything into it.
Totally.
Like you can't. Yeah. And so, luckily, we had already such a great, you know, a good name and a good reputation behind us. And so, people still wanted to work with us and book us. And basically, and every year since we've got back together, which was about 7 years ago. We've been planning on coming out with a new record, so it will be out soon.
How far along is that record?
And, you know, it's coming,
creeping,
it's coming along. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, we had Brad left the band for personal reasons, and you know, no one blames him for doing that, and that's awesome that he just recently got married.
Kiddo, right?
Yeah, and so we were about to go on a tour. It's the first tour back since the pandemic, and so we were kind of scrambling for a drummer, and that's when we got Longinus Parsons III from Yellow Card. Yeah, good old LP, man, and he joined the band, and once again, that's one of the things that like we were like, oh, this is we're.
Yeah, could not. He's incredible.
Yeah. Incredible person, incredible badass, and like he's on to us like every other day about
love
like,
that.
Writing and like and playing. So
I gotta have him on sometime.
Yeah, you do.
Dude,
so next
hook it up
next weekend. Yeah, next weekend we're gonna be demoing stuff and then continue writing.
Dude,
I know.
I love that.
Yeah, and so and like yeah.
That's exciting.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah, I love having LP in the van. It's great. We got new management now.
Yeah, I saw that recently. But what's the deal with that?
Oh, hey, can you edit this real quick? Because I got to find out what his name is. Dave.
Yeah, what was?
I can't remember what the man. Yeah, don't tell him.
No, I know. I saw it the other day. I added him on Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah, let me find out real quick what his.
It's like audio something, audio ferrant or audio.
Yeah.
Audio ferrant. Yeah. Audio Farah Entertainment. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Audio Faria.
Yeah. All right. So 1 minute and.
Audio Faria.
Audio Faria. Yeah. I saw them on Instagram.
Yeah. Audio Faria.
So what's that? What's that deal about?
Well, he saw us at our, 20th anniversary for Burn Alive by Time and was, I guess was pretty impressed and wanted to just work with us.
Is he from Jacksonville or where's he from?
He's from LA.
LA. Wow.
The real LA type, man. Yeah. He's a great guy. Yeah. Dave. Vader Dave is his name. Yeah, he was real stoked. And actually he came up with a lot of really good solutions to what our, to what we can do, which is, you know, touring very
sparsely.
Yeah. And he just was like, had a bunch of amazing ideas. And he's stoked on the band and wants to see us to our full potential.
I would like
to see that too. And, you know, and I think everybody in the band is real stoked on that too. And, that's basically the newest news.
Are you guys looking for a label now or with him or like, how's that?
I think it's going to be with Audio Faria.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, we're going to probably do some singles and not a whole LP yet.
That's how they do it nowadays.
That's how they do it nowadays. That's what I heard.
Kids do it.
Yeah. Those kids are just like here.
The chitlins.
The little small guys. They're just like, They're young. They can only do. Back in my day, we wrote a
10-song
record.
You had to buy the whole record, bro.
You had to do it. That's sad though, because like, it's sad because it's all digital. Because like the record, the cover of a record is important.
That's everything, man. It really is. Like for me,
so yeah,
dude, totally. If you put that much effort into your artwork, you're going to be a badass band to me.
Yeah. It could be a real shitty record musically. Yep. If your cover is cool,
I know, I'll buy it.
It's going on the wall at least.
I know. Dude,
I'll get it tattooed on my back.
Dude, I get it. I wouldn't do that, but I get it. Tell me, of all your records and all of your songs you've written, what are the ones that stand out to you? What are your favorites?
Oh man, Wolfbiker, I love Dead Horses. Once again, you know, like I'm a real big fan of Craig's writing.
He's
like,
great.
Even outside of Evergreen Terrace, it's
Bridge
just
of
so
Lines.
Yeah, just so it's to me it's unique.
It really is.
He put a lot of his own personal stuff, I feel like, into Dead Horses. And also with Josh being gone, I think he was able to be a little bit more free with it. And I love Dead Horses. I love them all. They're all, it's like picking between kids, man.
What's the song? If you had to like play one song live left, what's the song?
One song live?
Like if you're like, this is this my last song I gotta go out on.
This is my last. I would play Rolling Thunder.
Dude.
It's just short, bro. Sweet.
To the point. Yeah.
To the point. I like that one. I do like a little bit more fat. I take that back. It would be Mario Speedwagon. I love Mario Speedwagon. It's a song that lyrically that I wrote the lyrics to that mean a lot to me. So that's probably one of them. I think that was on Almost Home too.
Yeah.
And then there's a song, It's All Over But the Crying, that's on Dead Horses.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I love that one too. That's
great.
Great musically. The lyrics are great too. It means a lot to me. I didn't write the lyrics. Actually, Jason Southwell wrote the lyrics.
Oh, I love Jason.
Yeah, man. Love him too.
What's the tour the tours you remember the most? What's the ones that you like look back fondly on, or you're like, that was, I'm touring with my heroes? Like, what are the ones that you're like, oh my goodness?
Oh my goodness. I would have to say the one that stands out the most that comes to mind first too would be like these tours that our booking agent does in Europe at the beginning or the end of the year. It's called Persistence Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like 10, 15 days. We usually tour with a fewer, bigger bands, especially ones that are like bigger in Europe. But this one tour that I'm about to get to, it was Ignite. Agnostic Front. I think Walls of Jericho was on it. And, you know, all three of those bands are extremely huge in Europe, especially in 2007, which I believe was the time. So we had gone over 2 weeks before to meet up with Agnostic Front. And so we to do Spain, we went, just drove from Spain, landed in Spain, met with Agnostic Front, and then they had a keg on the bus, right?
Wow.
It was just a fucking keg on the bus. We immediately, it's Sworn Enemy was on the bus as well.
I booked them one time. Good guys.
And we just immediately just start chugging beers, like all of us. Like we're just like all right, just two New York hardcore bands, right? And just these bumpkins from Florida just like drinking,
raging,
like literally raging. I think we just started moshing. We just got instantly started moshing at one point. I love that. Yeah, it's great. So we played Spain. Shows were awesome. And then we drove to Italy. And I just remember like just being young and just like sleeping in nothing but like, you know, my black show pants, you know, like sleeping in his bunk, looking out the window, you know, no underwear, just fucking hungover.
Alive and free, bro.
Alive and free. 26 years old, you know, just like, all right, cool.
I'm in Europe.
Smoking cigarettes in Europe. Fucking doing the weed. Just drinking.
Smoking the ganja. Yeah,
smoking weed, having fun.
Bro, great. Just living the dream.
Living the dream. And then so that tour was great. The first half of that little tour with Agnostic Front, we went from Italy, and then we went from Italy to, we played Russia. It was the first time that we played Russia, played Moscow. We took this gnarly train from Moscow to St. Petersburg. The train, it was like freezing outside, you know, like fucking negative fucking -20 outside, but the train itself was stuffy, 100 degrees, just nasty, gnarly fucking Russian train going through the Russian countryside. And, you know, we finally get to St. Petersburg and play an awesome show. And then we fly from St. Petersburg all the way, you know, to meet up with the Persistence tour. And then those shows were just
bonkers,
massive, thousands of people a night.
That's nuts.
And, yeah, it's great. Just like I've heard of Ignite. It was the first time that I ever really got to see them live, and they're like such a different hardcore band too.
Great,
and just like in love with that tour. Love that tour. That's probably one of the funnest. Yeah,
dude, I saw them randomly with Goldfinger and Midtown. It was like a random. I was like,
really?
It was amazing. It was like in Springfield, Missouri. It was like in the middle of nowhere.
All right. Hell yeah. Boom. I mean, that was just great. It was a good time to be alive. Yeah. And there's so many tours. That tour is great. And then this tour that we did in Australia called Soundwave, it was just
bonkers.
Like every band that you can almost think of was on this tour.
Wasn't like Nine Inch Nails and
Nails.
Yeah.
Aquiline Trio, like Saves the Day, Alice in Chains was on that with their new singer. Like we've stayed. They would group us together with like heavier like bands, and so we would stay usually with Lamb of God and like in the same hotel. We would stay with Lamb of God, but we'd put all the same bands in the same hotel, like kind of the same tier. And one time it was great. So on this plane ride from Adelaide to Perth, it was Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, Mike Herrera was on the tour too. It wasn't MXPX, but Mike Herrera was there. People in Saves the Day, people in Newfound Glory, people in Lamb of God, people like there's probably Senses Failed was on it. On that plane ride, I believe, I'm sure.
Who's who?
50 who's bands. Who? Yeah, on this plane. And I was just like praying for the plane to go down. I was like, just fucking, because I want to be a part of this history. Just go down and kill all of us right now. I want to be.
Esteemed rocker Trent Reznor and other bands.
And other bands. Yeah. I'd be like, I want to be a part of the Day of Music Die, but I'm just fucking. Chubby Checker and the plane was fucking Buddy Holly and fucking, you know, that's
I would have missed you.
Anyway, some people would know. And then Evergreen Terrace, they'd build a plaque and Evergreen Terrace's name would be on the plaque somewhere. That tour was great. They didn't have the hotel rooms ready. So there's 20 bands and they're like, we'll just open up the hotel bar. It was like, we'll open up the bar for you guys and you can have all the drinks you would like. And we're like, what the fuck? Like, you just did that for 50 punk rock metal bands? Like, are you fucking mad? Like, it got kind of ugly fast. But we were like trying to, it would be like a roller coaster. We would just be drinking and just like just everybody would go around like almost like a big social party where like somebody would go over to another table and be like, hey, what band are you in? Like, oh, you know, I'm in this band. And like, what, how are you doing? Like, what band are you in? And then we would just start getting crazy and like start moshing. And then someone would be like, no, guys, don't do this. Until bar. Let's calm down. Like, all right. Finally, they just couldn't wait long enough to just be like, get to their rooms. We don't care if it's
go to your room.
Go to your rooms. Soundwave, that was probably a fun tour.
Yeah.
Probably.
That's sick. Who's to say? So I saw you guys just did your anniversary show in Jacksonville, Underbelly, right? The Burned Alive.
Yes.
Sorry I didn't make that. I feel bad saying that. I really should have came out. I know. I'm a fool.
Yeah. Everybody was there.
Well, I wasn't.
Everybody but you.
I know. And I watched the Lamb Goat video. It looked really cool.
Yeah.
I really bummed I didn't go. How was that?
It was great, man. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of pressure. I would wake up in like the middle of the night before the show being like, am I going to be able to do this? And it turned out being really good. The show was a lot of fun. I will have to say that I started really kind of developing a weird problem where if I get too nervous, and I don't know what this is, but if I get too nervous and my adrenaline gets too high, I black out at the show, and I won't remember the show at all.
Wow.
So like bigger shows, like this last pre-Furnace Fest show, that was huge.
It was
great. I don't remember.
Amazing.
I don't remember the first Furnace Fest back. I don't remember that show, and I don't remember this Burned Alive by Time show, unfortunately, which is really weird. And it's not alcohol based either, because you would think if I was that blacked out drunk, I would be not able to play the show.
Thanks so much for tuning into this latest episode with Andrew Carey from the band Evergreen Terrace. I really appreciate Andrew's time. It's really good to reconnect and talk about the past, the present, and the future. It's just, he's an awesome, super talented guy. Really, really enjoyed this conversation. So keep an eye out for the upcoming episodes we have planned. And thanks so much for tuning in. Thank you. Bye.
I want to give a shout out to my friends, the Bryans. Thanks to Brian Trummel for the Rumors Are True podcast artwork. And Brian Jaron for music and post-production.